You're listening to The Purple Mystic, a podcast for the modern witch, with your host, Natalie Sedgwick. Welcome back to The Purple Mystic podcast for the modern witch. Today I'm talking with Witch Doctor Utu. Welcome to the show, Utu. How are you today?
I am wonderful. I'm warm up here in Niagara, as can be.
We're warmer than we are in Dallas currently.
Evidently.
Yeah, we get wind chill down here that's got it below zero. So yeah, it's a little on the nippy side, but I like it. I like it. All right. So I want to start out with talking a little bit about who you are for people that have been living under rocks and or just are new and may not know who you are. Why don't you talk a little bit about yourself? I do believe you are a drummer. You are of Scottish descent and you practice in some of the more what would be considered like African traditional religions or the African diaspora, correct?
That's right. Yeah, I was I was born in Scotland and moved to Canada when I was just a wee lad, you know, like barely walking really. And I grew up in Canada. I grew up in Toronto area. But I've been living in the Niagara region for, better part of 30 years now, But I have spent, I'm right on the border. So I've spent almost equal amount of time in the last, at least 20 years in the United States. I travel there so much to all the pagan festivals, conferences, friends, family, things of that nature. So, I'm just kind of like a world citizen, I suppose, But yeah, it's true. Like, I am definitely, in the last at least 15 years, at least since the Facebook era, more known for my work amongst, like you said, African traditional religions. I am a drummer. That's how I ended up in those religions, early 2000. literally just because of that, just kind of prior to, internet being available to everyone, people still made phone calls, had Rolodexes, and I was hanging with a crew of guys that were, a few different colors, and we were, talented enough, and we were already playing those types of drums, and so got invited to a couple of ceremonies, and then it just kind of spiraled from there, because at the time, in between a generation, I suppose, there just wasn't quite enough drummers to facilitate some of the ceremonies that were needing them. So, it just eventually became that. And all the way back in early 2000, I became a member of the New Orleans Voodoo Spiritual Temple under Priestess Miriam. And that ended up initiated an Ifa from the Yoruba tradition in West Africa. And Santeria as well. There's a few of them, but I'm not exactly a title collector, but they're all just, because eventually to be a drummer sort of on the inside of where initiations were happening, it just eventually it became organic in that regard. And so, but I am since the 90s, a fully functioning straight up witch initiated in old craft. And that's why I've been around the pagan community for the better part of 20 years. And very blessed, with the Dragon Ritual Drummers, the drum troupe I'm in, we've been able to travel to, all across the continent, United States and Canada, coast to coast. And we've seen and met some of the legends while they were still alive and got to interact with awesome communities that never would have known existed and some of the big spiritual festivals. So that's kind of the work that, I've mostly been doing drumming, facilitating ceremonies that are usually about uniting people together in some way, shape, or form. That's kind of what my gang's all about.
And writing fabulous books.
Oh yeah, my book, yeah. And so, and then there's that. There's the fact that despite my place in amongst certain African traditional religions, I really rarely post much about it, unless it's about the Voodoo Spiritual Temple as far as promotion or fundraising for them or a couple of other entities that are from Yoruba land. I'll sometimes share fundraising and, things that I'm up to. But I mostly sort of publicly did my own thing, and that was to sort of honor the spiritual legacy of where I live in St. Catharines. And I live right on the blocks of where one of the routes at the Underground Railroad ended with Harriet Tubman brought her particular track right here to the neighborhood I live in. Friends with a great deal of descendants of the freedom seekers and people that run a couple of the churches that were built by freedom seekers. And there's a small community of those folks left, not a lot, but they definitely fight for their heritage and their place in Black history here in Canada. And I'm blessed to be good friends with them. And And so most of my public work has either been, yeah, performances with the Dragon Ritual Drummers or lectures, open ceremonies, and workshops surrounding the spiritual work that, you know, I think is important to highlight, which is underrated and under-promoted, under-known. It's just not something a lot of people are aware of, is just how much spirituality, in particular magic, and all manner of things we would call conjure or root work, was a big part of the Underground Railroad, including people like Harriet Tubman and John Brown. You know, these folks were all very mystics, much, you know, very much involved in the life of the mystic and channeling and you know, seership and divination. So that to me is the work that I've sort of been entrusted to work and promote. And that's kind of like me in a nutshell right there.
And I wanted to talk about your book, because I'll be really honest, that is not an aspect of magical practice that I am very familiar with down here in Texas. And I grew up in San Antonio, which is considered South Texas. It's really kind of bordering on that midline region where Austin is. Austin's about an hour north of us, but it's considered South Texas. And you see a lot of some of that is Santeria and the root work, and some of those, you know, Southern conjure kind of spread its way into Texas. So I was exposed as a young child to some of that stuff, but indirectly, because I was raised very Church of Christ. My mother was very staunch. We weren't even supposed to talk about that kind of stuff, but it was something that always drew me. And I am interested, because one of the things that I wanted to talk about was what happened to you with Pantheacon, because I thought they really did you wrong, supremely. I think ultimately ended up being a good thing, because it heavily promoted your book, which wasn't even published at the time that all of that happened. But it brings up the topic of cultural appropriation, which I hear all the time. And, you know, being white, I mean, I'm a white woman, you know, and you hear things like white privilege, and you hear things like cultural appropriation, and it makes you hesitant to try to learn about any of these things, because you don't want to be accused of any of that. And the issue with that, though, for me, is that my personal belief is that we live many lifetimes, and we don't know who we were necessarily in the previous lifetimes. If you are drawn to or called to a particular spirituality, you don't know that it wasn't because it was something that was an integral part of your soul previously, for one part, but also I feel that we all come from the same divine source. So we all have something to share with one another and to gain that brings us closer to that. And that would include learning about things, even if you're not directly practicing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You know, it's hard for me to, like, a big majority of my work for many years was, you know, using my platform, which is a pretty big one within the pagan world. You know, like, you know, I'm in that, you know, A-minus list. You know, there's not many people that get flown and you know, paid to travel around like I do. So a great deal of my platform was pointing out, in my opinion, what was, you know, straight up a cultural appropriation, levels of people perpetrating to be things they weren't. You know, because I'm lucky. I'm in that world, and where I live, I'm surrounded and work with a lot of people that are First Nations, which is, you know, what we call the Native American population.
Right.
And so it's easy to tell. So it's hard for me sometimes at this point, after Pantheacon's debacle, to really give a shit. I'm not going to lie, because, you know, it's like, but the truth of the matter is cultural appropriation is a real issue.
Yes, it is.
I left it. I left that for other people to determine. But even Pantheacon, within a couple of days of this sheer amount of people of, you know, people of color, you know, that are priests and priestesses of these religions and traditions that have been watching what I've been doing for a long time. Everything I do is wide open, transparent. I get around. And so everybody within a 6 degree of separation within various African traditional religions were well aware of what I was up to, what I was promoting, illuminating. And, you know, and I received a lot of blessings, a lot of support from a great deal of them. Never had anyone tell me that this is not correct. In fact, most of them would provide divination, advice, and actually end up helping with the work that I was doing. I count many babalaos, awos, and tatas, and yeyes, and mambos as people who contributed to my work, like actively. So cultural appropriation from Pantheacon lasted about 2 days. Mm-hmm. And when they realized that wasn't the case, because it wasn't, no one wrote a book like I wrote. It's hard to be, you know, I'm basically, my book was a history book.
Right. About
who helped make the Underground Railroad work. It's the only book that pointed out ever any of the spiritual nature of it, because his academia, mainstream history, would never point out these things, because they're not going to stain their beloved Underground Railroad with tales of voodoo and witchcraft and magic and root work. So somebody had to do it. And a couple of black historians that are renowned actually also helped me with my book, you know. So the fact that a bunch of white people got all bent out of shape was humorous to many. But the problem is, you know, what the real debacle was that once they realized that that was an incorrect assumption, they spent several months trying to label me as everything from a homophobe to a transphobe to a racist to a rape apologist. I mean, the whole SJW playbook.
That is what bothered me about the whole situation. The two things you just stated: one, it was a bunch of white people who really didn't know anything about what you were doing, and I have to say, your book, which is Conjuring Harriet Mama Moses Tubman and the Spirits of the Underground Railroad, for those who are interested in the book, it's a excellent read. And I was nervous stepping into it again because I didn't know anything about those types of religions, or my knowledge was very limited. I found your book to be an incredible resource. It was very well researched, extraordinarily well written, highly respectful of everything that went on, from the terminology that you used to how you spoke about it, the way you delivered the history that you had researched, and you know, the fact that it was a bunch of white people getting all up in arms when you had a group of people. And you're very good about pointing out in the book that the Underground Railroad wasn't just people trying to escape from slavery. It was all the people who helped them, from all different backgrounds, Native American, the Quaker, all of them that came together to get these people the freedom they deserved and that they deserved. And, you know, I find that it sparks an interest. I really enjoyed your book a lot. I'm currently reperusing it, trying to go a little deeper with it, because when I initially got it, I read through it. And then I set it aside and I kind of pondered on some of the things you said and did a little more research. And now I'm going back and I'm rereading to go a little deeper with it. And I was so disturbed by what I saw as a character assassination for you, because although I have not known you a long time, you know, 20 years, we have been in contact for a couple of years through different groups and through Facebook and things like that. And I was very excited about getting to talk to you, actually talk to you in this forum, because I want you to talk a little bit about the research you did for your book and how you came to write it. Was it something that you just woke up one day and said, you know what, this needs to be written, it needs to be done, and I'm going to do it? Or, you know, what was the initial direction? What was the initial spark that resulted in the book?
Well, that's easy to answer. I just wanted to address one other thing too. It's just with your prior question. So when it comes to cultural appropriation, which obviously is an issue, I believe, you know, there's always been people of various colors and various cultures involved in the African traditional religions. Almost all of them have nothing to do with the American experience. They're all Caribbean religions. So, you know, I've sat in a lot of awkward rooms with a lot of people that speak only Spanish or some other patois and heard their opinions about, you know, elements of what goes on in America. It's always going to be uncomfortable. And to be quite honest, during the Pantheacon issue, believe me, there was a couple of people of color that jumped in on that. There's always going to be some. It wasn't, you know, all white people, but it predominantly overwhelmingly. And that just brought up the awkward question of, well, who speaks for who, right? So a cultural appropriation, though, is like, you know, are you going to fiend to be something that you're not. You get exposed to, this is my personal opinion from what I can gather from my colleagues and contemporaries, is that if you're going to enter into a religion that is, or some tradition that's sort of like from another culture, and, you know, that's always going to be the case. Mm-hmm. Almost, I mean, I don't know any clergy. I don't know any clergy in the African traditional religions that do not want people of all hues to be involved. They're very proud of their religion. And they find it, you know, again, I'm speaking from people that are from either Western Africa or from the Caribbean. This is something that they're proud of, that people from various hues, cultures, and parts of the world want to be a member of these religions. Why not? The glorified beings that are exalted are beautiful and have a great deal of many gifts to give to humanity. And they teach us a lot about ourselves. So the difference is, yeah, there's barely, you're never going to hardly find a one of these traditions that doesn't have people that are white, Asian, or, you know, or European, because there's a big difference between a European and a white. That's another conversation altogether. But, you know, because European people have culture, they come from an identity. So, but if somebody now enters into that world and then just turns around now and maybe takes their whole, you know, witchcraft or Wicca oriented business and then just flips it up and turns it into a hoodoo and root work one, and now is identifying with a certain name like Papa something or Mama something, and, you know, that's where you're getting to run into problems, you know. So as long as somebody is honest about who they are, mm-hmm. what they're doing, and is, you know, being, you know, mentored or given blessings from the people of those religions, then you're, then as long as you're not going past what you're supposed to do, there is no problem. There is, seems to be now, some people would refute what I just said and said, no, we don't care. But that's actually a very small minority. So, you know, yes, people pretending to be something they're not, teaching something they shouldn't be, there's an issue. It's legit.
I agree.
Someone having a bona fide interest or a calling to be a part of a religion or tradition. And in my case, for my book, you believe me, before my publishers got it for read it, I let people that were not exactly even my best of supporters in some regards, you know, vet that book and read it. And I took advice. What would I put out there in the public that would not offend anybody, that would not give up any secrets of African traditional religions? So that it was something, essentially, the point of the book was so people, yeah, it was to highlight the idea of actual progressive working together, since we have so many issues in this continent that need addressing, then why not approach it? I'm just doing my part, chuck a little bit of a different conversation into the occult book world and the African traditional religion book world, because most of them are just regurgitating, you know, various things. So something different to say, hey, look, here was an actual progressive movement that was illegal, that was about social justice, racial equality, you know, and people that were various classes, various colors, different sexes coming together to work as a community. That seemed like a fun thing to highlight to me, or a helpful one. So, you know, they purposely put things in there that would not be anything that strange. Venerating heroes that are white or black that helped change the course of history, and not just, you know, everyday strange heroes, like people that made bonds together to fight tyranny, to fight, you know, oppression, and made bonds that carried on into the afterlife. And this, to me, was it was something that, you know, had to be illuminated. And so for the reason of writing the book was never an intention. I had been doing this work for better part of 10 or more years, just as that, my work. I was already doing the research because I wanted to make sure I was doing it right. Again, right. Where I live, I have friends that are black historians, that are descendants, that were kind of always, you know, into what I was doing. And I hang around with these people. They're friends of mine. And so everywhere I went in the United States, it became like a mission, an obsession, so to speak, to try to, you know, locate various little things about, well, where was this region? What was that all about for the Underground Railroad? Just basically, you know, following that sort of mystical path, you know, of research, and just making things because I was doing so many open ceremonies at places that I presented. So the research was already mostly done. I just never really intended on writing a book about it. Honestly, never thought anyone would want to read a book about it or it would even be possible. But hey, I was at Hexfest a couple of times, and you know, Judica Ills, who's the head of acquisitions for Wiser, she was there, and she knew who I was, and I literally just said, "Have you ever thought about writing a book about what you've been doing?" And I said, "A couple times this crossed my mind, but not really." And she's like, "Well, why don't you put something together and let us look at it?" So I'm not gonna lie, I probably dragged out a year or more before I really followed through with that, you know, because to me, was daunting. I've never written a book that big, right?
It's very daunting to write a book, even a small book.
Yeah. So I finally said, okay, let's do it. And, you know, I checked with a few people and said, hey, you know, what about this? And they're go for it. Go for it. Why not? You know, this is different. It's new. It's shedding light on something that no one else has written about, and it's important. So go for it, brother. And so I said, all right, let's go. So that's, you know, then I, you know, carved out time when I had a contract all of a sudden to fulfill the obligation. And I dove right in, and I wrote it all from right here at the end of the railroad, so to speak. It was a very unique experience when I would, you know, carve out a couple of weeks at a time and go right deep into, you know, the sort of like having to name things I'd never named, or, you know, pick and choose what I was going to put in there. I had a word count that I had to follow. That was hard. There was supposed to be a part two. I highly doubt it's going to happen based on the reception of the first one. So that's all good. I got other subjects to write about, but maybe someday.
I'm disappointed to hear that because I really found this to be a fantastic book that I would like to learn more about, to be honest with you. It just, I, you know, being female, sometimes life is not always fair to you. You know, and I would in no way equate my situation with what any of those people experienced. So I don't want anybody to misconstrue that. And for my purposes, I make a distinction between cultural respect and cultural appropriation. Just as you stated, to me, when someone has an active interest and true respect for something that they want to honestly learn about and that they feel that they could grow from, to me, that's not appropriation. To me, that's cultural respect. And it's in how you present it. You know, it's not like, you know, you're purporting yourself to be something that you're not. You have been initiated into these traditions. That right there means that you're a part of that. So I really enjoyed your book. But to me, it was the spirit of somebody, two people particularly that I have always had a great deal of respect for growing up, which was Harriet Tubman and Sojourner Truth. You know, when I was growing up and I was looking at, you know, kids have role models, people that they learn about, that they respect. And every time you had to do some little history project about, you know, pick somebody in history you'd like to have a conversation with, it was usually one of those two women because they faced a lot, you know, at the time, you know, they overcame a lot. They were very strong women, educated to an extent in their own way and powerful, that were fighting against things that were injustices. And how can you not respect that? So I found that your book just kind of sparked that in me all over again. And I feel very badly that there won't be a second part to it because I think you have a lot to offer. And I just, Now that being said, I also noticed that like some people that have published books recently and they're getting like lots of book tours and things like that. I hadn't seen any of that with you with yours. Was that a choice or was it just something that never came up as being offered?
Well, it depends on the publisher. So my book was published by Wiser Books, and most of the other ones that you see are predominantly going to be from Llewellyn. You know, I don't know. I've heard rumors that both publishers actually will promote a book tour, so to speak. But you know, part of my acceptance to getting it is they do vet the author. They vet the author, and they look at, okay, well, this guy travels around a lot, so he can promote it himself. And that was always the intention. You know, it's not official there won't be a part two. I'm fairly certain of the fact that it won't be anytime soon, maybe someday. But you know, but there really wasn't you know, much of a, you know, again, I'm not throwing any shade anywhere. It's just reality is reality. There, once the shitstorm hit, like 2 months before the book was released, when I was supposed to be at Pantheacon, that kind of just halted everything as far as anything official, because you know, people, I understand it. People got nervous and they didn't want to endure, you know, this kind of like you know, cancel culture attitude of just, you know, try to shout something down. Like they tried really hard. So, you know, I've spent the last 2 years, you know, because this February, this is the release, you know, the release anniversary. So I just spent nearly 2 years just wherever I was going, I promoted the book myself, and just sort of once in a while, you know, keep sharing stuff on my pages and talk about it. Yeah, I always knew it was going to be a very niche topic. I mean, it's, you know, root work and conjure within publishing world is already a very small place, something that's got something to do with more history and something a bit more nuanced with some actual fact and truth, as opposed to mythology and romance, of what a, which a great deal of Southern root work and conjure books are. It's a great deal of you know, I don't know what to say. There's a lot of imagination. There's a lot of imagination and rewriting and quite
very
honestly,
generous way of putting it.
There's a lot of whitewashing in there because the majority of the authors are white, and I understand that. That is why I specifically chose. Said, all right, I'll do this. And I went out of my way to make it a very, you know, black focused book, you know, because that is the true nature of the Underground Railroad. It is about the freedom seeker and their escape. And sure, you can highlight the people that were allies. And that's the point, too. So that people, you know, a lot of people, people like that are in, let's just say, the pagan community, and they feel a drawing towards, you know, wanting to experience maybe Santeria or voodoo or root work. And just a lot of people just don't really have a knowledge of the fact that these religions and these traditions actually are, you know, in their foundation is the Black Americans' struggle to maintain their identity and their integrity and their religions and traditions. It is rooted in struggle. It's true. It's not, there was no time, like, see, one of the mythologies you'll come across in Southern root work or conjure is that, or hoodoo, is that, you know, some Black person and some Native American person and some European person sat at a table and formed this religion, so everybody has access to it. That's just not true. You know, all of the elements of European mysticism or occult that was gleaned into that, into hoodoo and conjure, was because of the African American and what they were, they created it 100%. There's just it's irrefutable. And whatever elements they took from the Native American, you know, iconography or ethnobotany, animal totemic energies, they gleaned that. They built that themselves. And it did change when it spread throughout the United States. But, you know, again, I wanted to make sure that if somebody it's a very entry level book, to be honest, because that's what book one was supposed to be. Here's a history of what the Underground Railroad is. Here's some of the heroes. There was going to be more of them in part two. And here's the truth of the matter of where all the commercialized root work and conjure comes from. People sell tons of things online about, you know, law, stay away, avoid the police, you know, all these kinds of conjurations and oils and spells. Those are all unrooted and hiding from bounty hunters, escaping law enforcement to make it north. Like, you know, carrying High John the Conqueror route wasn't to get you laid or be good luck in gambling. That happened 50 years after emancipation. That route was carried to help you attain your freedom and to help, you know, bring blessings from an elevated spirit who is trying to, you know, end suffering upon his people in slavery. It's so I just wanted to make sure that that was brought to the surface. And then if various people of various colors were like, oh, okay, now that I'm going to go and ask for some initiation or some mentorship from somebody in an African traditional religion, at least I get it now. I understand where this all comes from. And so I was actually trying to do a good, that's again why a lot of clergy in my religions blessed me and said, go for it, because this is good. You're doing the right thing. You know, and that's really the thing. You know, it's you got to, you know, make sure that you're in it for the right reasons. And it's a long haul, you know, like anything. Anyone joins, you know, traditional witchcraft, it doesn't mean instantly, pow, you're a witch and you have a business. You got to go through the trials and tribulations, initiation, you know.
Well, and it's funny you say that you're a witch and you have a business. I think it's so funny that a lot of people try to just immediately go into a business that haven't practiced at all, that don't, you know, they haven't really gotten that connection yet. Because I felt all through reading your book that there was a deep connection. And I think you sense that when you're reading something that's been written by somebody that's lived it versus somebody that's trying to make a buck off of what they think is trendy at the moment. And I've seen a lot of that going through things. But I hope you do eventually come out with a second book. And that brings me to something else I wanted to bring up. One of the things that you point out when you talk about setting up a space to honor Ms. Tubman, you talk about bringing in Christian iconoclasty, because you said that was very important to her, yet she maintained her practice in the conjure. She carried roots with her. She had things. So I think that's kind of an interesting dynamic to talk about, was how these ideas melded, because a lot of what you see in the Bible speaks against the use of these types of things. So How do you think that they were able to kind of meld those without there being a conflict?
So that's again, that's a straight up, that's a black thing, right? That's in America, that this is what the enslaved individuals that could read did. That's part of why I think it's such a beautiful religion, a tradition, an expression, is that, first of all, Harriet Tubman, yeah, she was a, her grandmother was born in Ghana, right? She was a descendant of Ashanti people, and her grandmother was a healer, so was her mother. And so this was at the time, before, the Civil War, this was commonplace that the Black American, again, I'm not trying to sound like some sort of savior or somebody. I'm just educating people on reality and just making sure people know that, a lot of people, a lot of neo-pagans, they have problems with the Christian element of hoodoo and root work. If you do, well, I got bad news for you, because it's a part of it. And but you need to know why. And that's because in the Bible, it was essentially being used as a grimoire by people on the plantation. Because there's a lot of, allegory in there that, yeah, are there parts that say not to seek divination and witchcraft? Yep. But meanwhile, in the other parts, it's telling, stories of prophets that when they're fighting against tyranny could do that. And Harriet Tubman particularly drew her inspiration, and most of the Underground Railroad's religious allegory came from the Old Testament, specifically Exodus, where it was about the enslaved under Moses, rising against Pharaoh, finding emancipation, finding freedom, and making it to Canaan, and to the promised land. So that was, there's you get what you use what you can find. And so, it's not like there was other grimoires or spell books out there for people to use, but rest assured, there were these unique workers in these communities that created their own religion, their own tradition, by utilizing elements of what was in the Bible, the Psalms, various parts of Exodus, and as well as utilizing elements of what was still preserved that they could remember or be handed down that were like, African based. And again, it's so different because, there's like 10 different countries with about 100 different tribes in West Africa, where a majority, not all, but a majority of the slave trade was sourced from to bring into the Americas and the Caribbean and South America. So you have multiple cultures. People just think Africa, all the same. And I know a lot of people don't know. I know a lot of people don't think that, but we're not surprised. There's a lot of people that do. They're just not very educated about certain things. So there's so many elements. The Umbanda that's practiced in Brazil is very different than the Espiritismo in Venezuela, or the Lukumi in Cuba, the Voodoo in Haiti. On and on. These are all very different expressions, different populations that had different slaving. Colonizers that were, either Portuguese, Dutch, British, French, or Spanish. It's an expression, and to me, it's the foundations of America. I mean, I'm not from here, so I'm always fascinated by everything about the North American continent, including its horrible legacy. But somewhere in there is always people striving. There's always people striving to make things right. And we forget that, especially now. It's like everyone's just so mired in the struggle and the fight, and everything was shit, burn it down. Whereas I love to look back at the heroes, even 50 years ago, 70 years ago, 100 years ago, who were fighting. And I mean, if you look at Harriet Tubman, yeah, she watched and witnessed, helped end slavery. Civil War came and went, and she continued to fight for women's right to vote. Like, she never stopped till the day she died, promoting equality for everyone. And to
Because
me,
I
that's an inspiration. And she was raised, born and raised a slave, treated like that woman was treated. I know a lot about her life. I can only put so much in the book. Treated like worse than an animal. And yet, in her adult life, after escaping slavery, her closest confidants and supporters and people that she trusted with her life were white people. So that arc of a growth in a human being, that inspires me. That to me is somebody worth revering, exalting, and honoring, and never forgetting. And if you're going to honor Harriet Tubman, and this comes from people, I know people that are descended from her family. I also know people that are descended from the arms of her family. Okay, so they're people that I communicate with, and they even agree, because they're very religious, that if you're going to celebrate Harriet Tubman, you have to honor every aspect of her. They may not be a big fan of elements of root work and conjure, and I took that into consideration how I wrote the book. We weren't concerned. Me or any of the people involved in my book had no fear about any descendant of Harriet Tubman or any famous freedom seeker because they vetted the book. The people we were afraid of were John Brown's family, the white insurrectionist. You know, that's the person. And I talked to one of his descendants on the phone, and he was definitely kind of like, what? And, you know, I was like, yeah, you know, well, obviously his grave, he's a martyr. He's a martyr in American history. He's a controversial figure, but he was on the right side of history. And so, yeah, people are going to venerate him if I have anything to say about it. And so we were worried about that because the book ended up in the John Brown Institute. So anything that's got his name on it goes in there. So, yeah, but thankfully, historians, and there's one particular historian, I'm not going to mention her name. She's white, and she's the do-all, end-all gatekeeper of everything Harriet Tubman. She is, and she's American, and she is hostile towards black authors who are descendants to try to write about the Underground Railroad from their perspective. And that's why a few of them were helping me write this book, saying, put this in there, put that in there. It'll drive them crazy because academia, you know, they don't like what I have to do. I've met a lot of them. I've met this woman who's the gatekeeper of all gatekeepers. And I've shook hands with her a couple times, and she knows all about me, but academia decided to be smart, unlike social justice warriors, and they just shut up and said, let's not give this book any attention. Let it just be in the back corners of occult books, and we'll have no problems. And they were right. They've never put it on the chop block and said, we don't like what this guy's saying. But that's ultimately because, and I know that two of the most ferocious white gatekeepers of everything Underground Railroad and Harriet Tubman, they read my book, and they never said shit. It's because everything in there is accurate, and that's because my sources were two descendants that are black of Underground Railroad freedom seekers that helped me with that, you know? So yeah, you're not going to have anything to say about it. I wrote something that's honest, you know? So.
And you can tell that honesty comes through. Like I said, I think when you read something, you can tell the passion and the sincerity that's, and it's so well researched. You know, the fact that a lot of it is history. I mean, I'm a history buff, so I was super excited getting into your book and reading about the history and things that weren't as well known. And that, you know, I knew about the fact that Harriet Tubman carried a piece with her because she was going to get them to freedom or they were going to keep quiet. It was a dangerous business. And I know a lot of people that were unaware of that fact. And so I thought it was interesting you brought that up because it was something that I came across when I was a kiddo doing research on her for a paper in school, I think in like sixth or seventh grade. It wasn't something that was talked about. And you bring up some of these little details that just bring that whole experience. It was an experience. It was a journey. And it didn't end when emancipation came because equality was not yet achieved. And so her fight, I think, speaks to all of us that would like to see this horrible divide just, I don't expect it to dissipate. I don't think it's going to dissipate. But I think people such as yourself continue to carry on the work that these people started in preserving and respecting the roots of those practices and the history and the purpose of that went into it. Like you said, it was a search for freedom, for the right to be, for beingdom, to exist without abuse, you know, to stand equal with one another and it's a fight that's still going on, sadly, today. I think in some ways things are improved, but I think it's obvious with the recent years and the turmoil and that it's not perfect. Yeah.
You know, the funny thing to me, or the perplexing thing is, you know, having been basically a public presenter in the spiritual world for, you know, better part of 20 years, is that not that long ago, there was a unity, you know? There obviously there's always work to be done, just within the pagan community and the African traditional religious community too. Not that there's really a community there per se, because it's very tribal and house to house, but there's a lot of people that are doing some really terrible things in both these spiritual arms, you know, abuse, physical, sexual, commercial assault, yeah. Just outrageous, you know, literal outrageous. And in the pagan community, I remember, you know, early 2000s, you know, like, yeah, predators were around, but they've done a good job of getting rid of these people for the most part, I think, you know. Mm-hmm. And so there was always a sort of a sense of like, we're all in it together. And so the perplexing thing to me within the pagan community, just specifically speaking of that, is how we have this divide in amongst ourselves of people that are just so radically left, mm-hmm. Which is more so because there's, you know, of course there's people that identify everything. And again, I'm speaking as an observer from another country, right? But in America, right, specifically, you know, there's people that identify as right, left, and in the middle. But when you really get people to stand and raise hands on certain subjects, we're all in agreeance. We all agree upon certain things. So right. Why is this ridiculous try to shout down virtue signal element a part of a community that is literally, we are on the chop block in the eyes of much of, you know, the modern American world? You know, it's very Christian. We're not that mainstream. We're not in that safe of a place. It hasn't been that long. And so I think it's a waste that really, that if you've got some kids that have been raised in a generation where maybe they, you know, they require a little more safe space for whatever reason, you know, they didn't play outside as much and got raised online. I get it. I understand that. But, and they've obviously got a lot of enthusiasm. So I just think it's a lost opportunity that you have that level of enthusiasm. And on the other end, you have like people that are of a certain age group that are, what we could accomplish together, to me, is just, it's lost. And I find that unfortunate. And I'm hopeful that maybe, you know, once some temper tantrums are over and some people see that maybe that their way isn't exactly helping, then maybe that's still possible. But, you know, there's obviously a lot of work to be done still, you know, to maintain our own sense of being protected. And, you know, and some of the elders, I support them a lot because they're fighting for our legal rights, or legal rights of Americans, at least. And because it's very different here in Canada. There really is a very big difference, you know. In Canada, there's only a couple of big pockets of the pagans. It's in Ontario, here in Ontario, the most populated part of Canada, Toronto, the most multicultural place in the world, more so than London, England, or Berlin. It's like hard, it's major multicultural here. And so when we have open pagan festivals or circles in the southern Ontario, it's every color. Like, white people are minority, and then those white people are almost all, like me, born somewhere else. They're Hungarian, they're Greek, they're German, they're English, they're British. Like, they're all from somewhere else. And so, you know, it's different when you go into parts of the United States. And, you know, and I'll go, because for the work I've done, I've had to do some of my lectures and sort of my presentations at festivals to an all-white audience, you know, in a pagan circle, which is like, okay. And it's always been well-received. But I've also had to do them on a smaller scale to an all-black audience. And so those are always exhilarating to me, you know, because sometimes I know I'm not showing up at the most, you know, everyone's like, yay, it's this Utu guy. Some people there are like, what the fuck is this guy here to say? Let's listen, you know. So, you know, you always got to be able to be on, you know, look, I'm here to just tell you my story. Here's what I've been doing. Here's why. And so thankfully, I've always been lucky and, you know, most of the time went over a crowd or some people and ends up being people I stay in touch with, or at least, you know, help have a conversation about things that no one's talking about.
That's the key thing right there. And that's, I think, what disturbs me most about what I see going on right now in the United States in general, but in the pagan community. You cannot have open, honest discussions. There can be no dissent. You can't disagree with anyone on anything without being, you know, labeled in some way. And it makes people hesitant, I think, to express a view or to express an idea. Or like in my case, I kind of am made to feel like I shouldn't have an opinion because I'm white. So how can I have an opinion on dissent or anything? Well, but the fact is, I do have an opinion. I think that we need to respect one another, respect our differences, and learn from one another. Otherwise, we're going to end up pedaling backwards. We're going to end up right back where we think we've been fighting from all this time, because nobody's willing to work together and share ideals in an equal, safe forum where everybody can be respected. There's no respect. I feel like respect has been lost. And there's
no. Well, you know, our communities and our traditions, you know, the occult and witchcraft, there's nothing safe about it. There's nothing really politically correct about it. It's an ever-evolving thing that, has always, since the 60s when it really took root, there's always going to be complicated conversations about the inclusion of, the first problem was including gays and lesbians. That was the first struggle amongst these traditions. And it's not because they were against it. It's because it came from a staunch part of Britain where, sure, there was some, you know, I'm talking about, you know, modern traditional witchcraft, which is essentially the explosion that has allowed all of the New Age more so, and African traditional religions to sort of be under this umbrella. And it's because of the pagan community for all of its faults and blessings. So there's always been a fight for that. And me, as a younger man, when I joined into it in the 90s, already a very progressive person, I was raised very liberally and I lived in a few places around the world. And, you know, I was already blown away from right away. My first, believe it or not, the first pagan festival I ever attended was in Texas in the 90s, Council of the Magical Arts. I went there for a few years. That was part of the Sumerian tradition. I was part of the Sumerian family tradition, centered out of Texas with outcrops in Houston and Austin. So that was the tradition I was initiated in originally. So I spent I know Texas well. I miss it. I used to spend a lot of time there.
Well, come back.
I know. I was invited by CMA recently, actually, again, you know, to try to come down there one of these days. And so, you know, I was always really happy when I first entered in, even down in the United States, down in Texas. I was obvious. There's people of every color, every sexual orientation, and every class, you know, and that's what I think is worth celebrating the pagan community. There's always work to be done, but they've always championed equality of class, race, and sex. They've always been part of it. And that's because the people from those different, you know, places were vocal and constructive in their approach to help change things. It's always going to be the case. But right now, there's a battle for the soul of witchcraft right now. And I'm part of WitchCon. This online event coming up in March, March 5th.
Talk again. About next.
And so right now, this is happening. A combination of people that are bitter that, you know, Christian Day and Brian Kane, who are the top, you know, CEOs of Warlock Incorporated and own several stores, Hex and Omen in Louisiana and in Massachusetts. They got the name WitchCon before some other people did. So there's a bitterness there. Then there's a bitterness because when you have 100 presenters like they assembled of some of the most legendary people, well, everybody's going to have some haters. You know, when you get 100 people, some of them are historic. Then you have that on there. And then you have the fact that people just don't like the people organizing it. And you have the fact that they don't like that some of the people are teaching what they teach. So there's literally a campaign happening right now where they're trying to shout down and shame the people presenting at it.
Yeah, so I've seen that.
And I can tell you that there's people on the list of WitchCon that I'm not a big fan of. There's a few people that were hostile to each other, you know, but hey, life's complicated, you know, and at the same time, when these dumbasses are trying to, like, you know, shut this thing down somehow, which is just watching them try is hilarity, but it's forcing all of these people that normally wouldn't have had a bond, we're bonding, it's coalescing, and it's just forcing more people to be like, yeah, you know what, you know, fuck this shit, you know, excuse my French, but, you know,
I understand.
You know, screw this. You know, we're fighting for the ability because if you leave it to these dummies, they want everybody to be practicing only some form of a religion or something from based on where you're from.
Which goes right back all trying to get away from.
All due respect to everybody labeling everybody on the right as fascists. When you are telling people how they can worship based on their ethnicity and policing it, that's fascism. That's dictionary. That's dictionary.
Straight out of Webster's. Yes, sir. So,
this is why I don't have any love for the extreme right or left, because it's just, it's moronic. And I feel for everybody right in the middle.
You are speaking to my soul, brother, because that's been the issue that I've been seeing. And like you said, there was a person, I can't remember, and I don't want to say their name anyway, because I don't want to start a shit storm. But not that I'm afraid of a shit storm, but you know, I mean, when you're in the public, you got to be considerate. There was somebody recently on Facebook that was like, if you are friends with any of the presenters at WitchCon, unfriend me now. And I'm like, bye. Because
I've seen it.
I've got Alexander Cabot. I got Lady Rhea. I got, you know, Starian Ravenhawk. I mean, you know, I don't necessarily agree with everything that Brian Kane and Christian Day stand for, but like it or not, they are big within the community and they do a lot to promote the community and to bring it into the eyes of the mainstream, so to speak. And, you know, it doesn't mean I agree with everything they say, do, or think. I don't. But they are who they are. And like you said, we're supposed to be a community. Community doesn't mean you agree with everything. Community doesn't mean that you don't have disputes that you talk about. Community means you can come together when it's necessary. And I'm not seeing that right now. And it's, I think, a result of, you know, I mean, like it or not, the witchcraft community is a microcosm of itself that's impacted by the macrocosm of what's going on politically within the bigger sphere. It ekes into it. It's a system. We're a system. We're part of a system. And I really am bothered by that, because that person, by the way, also had several people on their friends list who were presenting at WitchCon.
The worst part about these people is that that's the word I was just about to say. Hypocrisy.
Thank you.
Selective memory, a selective outrage, and it's filled with hypocrisy.
Thank you.
Right now, because this week, right, everybody's talking about the actress Gina Carano being fired from Disney. Mm-hmm. All the way back to the 80s, the 1980s, if you said something outrageous and stupid, you lost your job. This is normal. We get it. The difference between that and what cancel culture is cancel culture is basically an orchestrated group of people that sit on the very far left that literally pick their targets and say, let's try to shout this person down. And the problem is they're ladled with hypocrisy and selective outrage, you know? So if you're going to lie, and then if you can't pin something on somebody and then you start chucking all these lies at them, then every cause you stand for doesn't even matter to me. You're just a lying hypocrite, fragile little individual that matters not. And so the best way to just say is just say no.
How dare anybody disagree with you or have something to say that you don't agree with? What happened to, okay, I don't agree with this person, so I'm just going to change the channel or make my statement that presents my argument and then be done with it. You know, it's amazing to me that people just go on the attack and they're like piranhas in the water, you know, until there's nothing left of that person, regardless of how valid their ideals may have been. And I'm of the belief that there's probably something valid in everyone's statement. I mean, when you look at the three basic political views, okay, you have progressive or left views, which are you want racial equality, which I don't think the other two are against, by the way. But everybody wants everyone to be able to live in the utmost of freedom with the utmost of whatever benefits we can all have from each other, right? That's a very progressive ideal. If you ask any conservative, they're going to tell you, well, of course I want everyone to be able to live in the utmost freedom, because what's freedom is freedom. It goes for all of us, right? When you start limiting freedoms of everybody, then you're going to start limiting freedoms for everyone. There are people who don't like to have the government telling them what to do, you know, or how to live or what to think. That's a very libertarian view. You've got people that want to be able to conserve things, which is a conservative view, right? And that includes environment. Now, people on all sides of the spectrum do things that some of us are going to disagree with either way, you know, and the key is not being hypocritical about your views. And that's what I'm seeing is complete hypocrisy on both ends. It's blowing my mind. I honestly think we have more that brings us together than what separates us. But right now that's lost. And it's
You're right. And I mean, I get that. And you know, it's just so funny that happening in the pagan community, that's part of the perplexes me.
Because again, we're a system. What affects one part of the system is going to affect the entire system. And it's eking its way into our community. It's poisoning our community.
Well, the good thing is I can just say, you know, again, as a person that gets around a lot, and I'm old school. I talk on the phone a lot. And so, you know, I talk to a lot of people that are influential as far as organizing events and things. And thankfully, you know, just getting the message out. These people can't do that. Is it uncomfortable to have, like, okay, some of us have bigger problems than others. So, yes, I've experienced a couple of times, literally hundreds and hundreds of people on threads just lambasting me, everything about me, you know. Yeah. And it's not comfortable. It sucks a little bit, you know, but does it really make a big difference when you really do the analytics? These people don't attend festivals. They don't spend money on any of the things that they don't promote anything. So who cares what they think, you know? And to just know that really at the end of the day, right now, I hate to say it, but it's a badge of honor. It's a badge of honor to people that are consumers, that are people that are, you know, enthusiastic about learning and wanting to be challenged in their perspectives and to grow that, oh, if this is the group of people or this is the event all these dummies hate, well, I'm all in for them. So there's a benefit to it. And believe me, I mean, it's almost crazy that we have to even say these things, but I'm in the Dragon Ritual Drummers, a band of five guys. Represents, you know, two guys born from another continent, me and Drago. You know, we've got gay members in our band, and when we had Nares traveling with us, a guy who's Guyanese even, he's got his own business, can't travel with us anymore. But in our trips in a van for 6 or 7 hours, major debates about everything from politics to environment. You know, like this is what's called life. You know, you find people that you can trust and gel with. And you challenge each other, and dialogue, and
that you know that respect. You guys respect one another, so you can disagree. You can agree to disagree. You're not trying to change each other's minds. You're simply trying to present a viewpoint.
Yeah, it's all nuanced about just maybe, you know, certain ways to get things achieved. We pretty much everyone in my Dragon Ritual Drummer crew, everyone in my life, I have a very insular life. There's nobody in my life circle, extended or close, that is problematic in any way, shape, or form. And the minute someone shows any of those traits, they're out of my life because that just doesn't go with me. You know, it doesn't work with me or anything I stand for. I'm very lucky. I have good support people. But, you know, to just, you know, try to just shut everything down that you don't like is just never going to happen. And thankfully, you know, it just seems like certain events for the next couple of years are always going to be lightning rods to this effect. And so all I can say is for people to just be strong and nothing really bad's going to happen. It's uncomfortable. It is uncomfortable to read some of these things, to endure it. I feel sorry for certain people, you know, but these things happen. And
some of the statements are so outrageous and vicious, you know, ridiculous.
Well, I mean, WitchCon is a great example, and the other event they put together, Christian and Brian, is Hexfest. Mm-hmm. And so it's so funny that, you know, the outrage culture of this SJW world have such a problem with them, yet all their presenters are pretty much the most prolific activists going. Like, everybody usually the most diverse as far as gay or race, you know, class again, or international people from other countries. They always have people that are literally actually making a difference, that stand on the right side of pretty much everything that these kids are all bent out of shape about. They're just doing it in a different way. They're doing it from a place of success and comfort and the fact that they've been trained or been part of a tradition and they embody it. So, you know, they try to take these guys down, and yet they're the ones hiring more than anyone else is. The most diverse lineup you'll ever see. And so what is it that you have a problem with? You know, is that their curse? You know, oh, we're going to be surrounded by the most. No, because these guys fight for equality, especially for gay witches. They're both gay. They're husband and husband. You know, mm-hmm. I've known these guys for almost 15 years. I've stayed in their home, you know, and you're never going to hear a more flavorful debate than between me and Christian Day. I can tell you that as long as we've known each other, it's always something that probably could be recorded and be sold.
I need to have both of you on at the same time and just sit back and let you guys.
We agree on just about everything, but again, it's just about nuance and about, you know, there's just so much debate all the time. There's always so much to debate, and that's the occult. That's witchcraft, that's spirituality, that's tribal magic. There's going to be debate. It's going to be uncomfortable because the whole point of magic is to change yourself out of your comfort zone in order to make yourself a better sorcerer, a better witch, a better community leader, if that's where you're going. And none of these things are done in safe space, and none of these things are done from a place of comfort. You have to have perfect love and perfect trust in your people around you and let fate take its path from there.
Which is a central theme of your book.
You're very kind.
That right there just brings it full circle, because you're absolutely right. Change is not made from a place of comfort. Change is made from stepping out of. And the whole idea behind being a magical practitioner is to change your environment to be a better environment, not just for yourself, but for those around you in some way. And we each define that differently, right? Our ways of getting there are different. Our ways of practicing that magic are different, but it's not that one is better than the other. And I think that that's kind of what I'm feeling is, but I did want to talk about the WitchCon. I wanted to see if you want to talk a little bit about what you're going to be presenting. Are you going to be presenting about your book, or is it going to be something totally different that you're going to be talking on?
Totally different. So when they came up with WitchCon, which is now going to be annual, and it's going to be the largest online conference of its type in the world, it's very unique. So the Dragon Witch Drummers, we are part of it. We are going to be drumming. See, they did something similar to this during Hexfest when they had to go virtual because of the lockdowns across the continent. So they discovered a unique way. So there's going to be an opening ceremony. And the opening ceremony, we're part of that. We drum for that. And we drum and are part of the closing ceremony in between this whole weekend. And we also, the Dragon Witch Drummers, perform a show. We're the only musical component in the event. So we perform a show on the Saturday night. And of course, anyone that buys a ticket, which is so outrageously cheap, I kind of have a hard time believing it. You know, they must be crazy, as they say, right? You can watch it as many times as you want. The idea that somebody could buy a ticket for WitchCon and would take a year maybe or 6 months, but if you watched every one of these presenters class, which you can when you buy it, you can watch it as many times as you want, the level of knowledge you'll come out of this with is from various traditions and various gnosis is pretty unique. So I basically decided that, I'm always causing enough trouble, so why not I do something a little different? So my personal class is actually about tribal drumming in the idea that, it's what is the one thing that truly is, indicative of most pagan festivals or conferences? It's going to be drumming.
Drumming.
And so that's been a thing that I was turned on to. I was already a world musician and into world drumming in the 90s. Again, I'm an old guy. But it was truly coming to this Council of Magical Arts and the black man who was in our tradition, Caleb, who was the amazing djembe drummer and one of the three men who kind of brought the djembe into the pagan community in this continent, it was what blew my mind. And we had drumming in the Sumerian tradition, and so I was already into that, and just took off from there for me, because there was a component in it within the Sumerian tradition that drumming was essential, at least helping as a foundation. So for me, it's been, again, I'm a ritual drummer, I'm an initiated drummer, I'm a professional musician. So drumming is a great deal of my life. So I noticed at all these events, a lot of people have different drums, and a lot of them don't really know where those drums come from, what culture they actually come from, what the purpose is. And so there is a way to bless your drum, to feed it, to bond with it, and to kind of know what you're playing. And there's a way to know that you can play certain drums in your house or versus out at a circle or, different ones. So my whole class is going to be, because I have essentially almost every drum there is in the world. I live in a house of drums. So I'm going to have it set up so that I can bring each one in individually, sort of discuss, where that drum comes from, how to sort of honor, work with it, get it to speak to you, so on and so forth. Because just one caveat, the djembe, that is the most synonymous drum with all of the pagan festivals and conferences, that's a war drum. That's a war drum from Ghana. That drum.
I did not know that.
They use different types of drums in various parts of West Africa for ritual, and the djembe was used for war. So the warring tribes would hear each other's ferocious attacks on these drums, and it was meant to instill fear, meant to let you know, this is the proficiency of our warriors, listen to our drum rolls. And that drum has one specific purpose, war. So it's kind of funny that it's become the most popular drum in the pagan community. It's always kind of funny to me, but hey, whatever. And so, that's what I'm going to discuss a little bit about, and sort of like how to bond with your drum, how to feed it. And, because WitchCon originally was going to be not 100 presenters. So once it really took off, I was like, well, maybe I should have done something a little, now that I see there's all this controversy about it, I'm like, I should have done something more, buddy, button pushing, but I can't do it all the time. Sometimes I just have to be,
I think what you're going to talk about is key and important because drumming is unique in terms of how it affects the biochemical aspects of the body and the brain waves and going from alpha and beta brainwave settings. I mean, I've done a little bit of research on that several years ago for Witch of the Moon, which is the YouTube channel that I'm a part of. So I think that drumming is unique in being able to shift your state of consciousness without artificial means, if that makes any sense at all.
Absolutely.
But it's also something that ties us. You see drums in some form in almost every culture worldwide. So it's one of those things that's uniquely human that binds us in terms of bringing together all of the cultures. It's something we can all relate to. We all move to the beat of a drum,
That's
maybe a
right.
different drum, but we all move to the beat of a drum. You hear a drum and you're like, you're kind of like, moving along with it. You're kind of doing, and for me, it's the bodhrán because I'm Irish and Scottish. So, well, it's an Irish drum, but I'm sure you know that probably better than I do because now I want to take your class and learn more about it. But every time I hear that, I'm just like, it's almost like a calling. It's kind of like,
Absolutely.
hey, and I can pick it out from within the music. Like I can hear it. And my husband's like, how can you hear that? But you can't hear me when I'm calling you from the other room. And it's like, because I'm ignoring you.
Right. Well, I will be talking about the Bowron for sure, because, specifically, even one of the priests of the Voodoo Spiritual Temple, Louis Martinet, who is one of my drumming mentors for sure, in ritual drumming specifically for the New Orleans Voodoo Spiritual Temple's Order of Service. And he actually did teach me, of all people, how to feed the Bowron, because there is, and that is, and I remember one night he was up north here at a huge pagan festival we were attending together, and there was about 70 or 80 drummers at this giant fire, and everybody's going at it. It was Sirius Rising. This was the event we're talking about. And, I looked over. Oh, there's Lewis, and he's sitting there behind a bunch of people playing his Bowron nice and quietly. And so, I walked over after a while, hanging out with him, and we're shooting the shit. And while I'm talking to him, people kept coming up and saying, you should have played a louder drum. We wanted to hear you play. You're playing that little drum and stuff. And he just kept telling everybody, I'm playing this drum for the Irish spirits. There's enough noise here. I'm doing this for them. And for this drum, and so, yeah, the lack of ego right there was astounding to me, and
That's a good man.
I
That's
paid attention. I paid attention. I was a younger man at the time. I was like, okay, so this is the medal I need to achieve when I get to be his age, and I'm that age now. So,
Well, but it's
yeah, there,
also
there's.
that goes back to that respect. He was honoring those spirits, even though it wasn't necessarily, of his background. He understood and could connect to that spirit through that respect, understanding, like you said, where the drum comes from, what its purpose was, how to connect. It's that connection.
I think he has like I believe somewhere in his family there was some Irish descent. He went to Ireland. He loves the Bowron,
Lucky,
and
lucky.
yeah, he so that's something that he and he for many years he lived in the Irish Channel in New Orleans, a neighborhood that was where all the canal the people that built the canal that were mostly Irish, they live in that neighborhood. So he's always had a real connection to that. And
Perfect.
then, but at the end of the day, I ended up, realizing as a Scottish person, because the Bowron is the same, that's the same traditional drum for us, at least the tribal one. And yeah, the way he told me how to feed it is it's accurate. There's you actually do feed a Bowron whiskey or scotch. There's a way to do it, and there's a way to talk to it, and a way to get it ready, and then it will play for you better. And that's the thing, I used to teach a lot more like this, from back in the day, more drum oriented workshops. And anyone that ever, came out of the sort of drum facilitation world, we always emphasize, like you said, we're that is the oldest instrument in humanity since time immemorial. It's the one drum that the shaman or the healer or the tribal leader, or the wise woman, they used that was the tool anywhere in this world. There's an expression, there's one thing we all do, and we do dance to the beat of a different drum, but the beat is the same. And if there's a little different, we can all learn to dance together. And that's the blessing that we have as the Dragon Ritual drummers when we perform as headliners, that we get to say, okay, yeah, we're at an event that's got 1,000 people or 300 people, but and there's a lot of diversity in that crowd, a lot of opinions. And so our blessing is that we get to have on that night, everybody dance together, sort of just tune out of the whole political agenda that everybody's got, which is very valuable. Everyone needs their opinions and needs to fight for the cause. But there's got to be a point, too, where you dance together, come together in community and appreciate the drum for what it is, you know, and that's what it's all about for me. And we all come, we're all born in the womb. We hear the drum, the heartbeat. That's 101 out of drum facilitation. We are, yes. We spent nine months, unless you get out a little earlier. Sometimes you stay a little longer. The smart ones stay longer. They don't want to come out. But we are listening to literally an ocean drum and a pounding drum the whole time we're inside the womb. And so I've witnessed it, whether it's in witchcraft traditions or African traditional religions. Fresh babies, the members of the temple, fresh out the womb, few days old, being in the room where there is a ferocity of drums playing, and that baby sleeps sounder than you can ever imagine because it sounds like what they've been listening to the entire time in the womb. I've seen it so many times. Babies of every color, at particular rituals, falling asleep and sleeping peacefully through an entire ceremony of drums, you know. So that's everything you need to know about just how soothing it can be.
Absolutely. And I think it was also a primary form of communication, especially cross distances. We didn't always have cell phones or Skype or, you know, Zoom. I mean, people could communicate with tribes that further away in distances, like you said, in some cases for the purposes of war, but also in times of peace to communicate, you know, about food sources and things like that through drumming. And I personally have an absolute love for percussion. So I'm gonna have to check that out now. I'm gonna have to check out your class.
There's nothing more beautiful than some of the tribal traditions that still exist when you watch the ones being performed where it's like literally a tribe welcoming another tribe and they drum and sing certain songs back and forth to each other. That's mm-hmm. I love that. That happens in every part of the world. Every part of the world where there's still somebody clinging to old traditions, that tradition in and of itself still exists. And that's one of the more beautiful ones, you know, that I feel is worth
those traditions, because it's those things that bind us. You know, that we need that. We definitely need that.
I'd love to just get a room full of all these SJW kids, just lock them in a big conference room, hand them all a drum and say, let's go, let's talk, work your aggression out. And at the end, we're all, did you notice we're all drumming together? That sounds really like sarcastic, but that's the reality that sometimes is a great method.
Don't you? Yeah. Eventually you're kind of all going together, right? And it gets that mindset going. And, you know, the beat'll change, but everybody keeps pace. You know, it connects us. Yeah, I agree. That would be great. We need to do that.
That's why the pagan festival and the pagan conference is unique, because no matter what's going on, there's some room or some area where the drum is happening at night. And that's the unifying place. That's the place you go for social interaction. That's the place you go to dance, have some fun. And, you know, so... And there's an etiquette, you know, that's what's, you know, various places you go. Sometimes there's a different etiquette for certain drummers, you know, and there's a different guy who's like the head dude or the head woman, right, or, you know, the head they, you know, in the community is like, this is how we drum. This is, okay, great. You know, love it. You know, I respect everybody's tribal boundaries. I'm cool. But it's always going to be the case. That's the unifying place. And so therefore, again, to quote Louis Martinet, one of my mentors, sometimes the most, you know, the deepest mysteries are the simplest. And there is right there, the one thing you need to know is what's the most attended popular part of a lot of these things is the drum circle or the drum party at night around the fire. So what is that? It's right in front of you. It's unity. It's people dancing together, drumming together, and being community and tribe together. Once you can establish that that is possible, and you look around any pagan festival of the various different types of colors of people, the sexual orientations or identities that are dancing together while the drummers are also every color, every spectrum, every identity, then there we have it right there. So now what is working there? What's working at this moment? That's what we need to sort of put in a bottle and apply to the rest of the fabric, because we already have the hardest part done. We celebrate together. And that's why it's my favorite part of the festival is to be at the drum circle.
And that, I think, is going to have to be our ending point, but that is perfect. Do you have anything else that you want to add? Do you want to tell people where they can find your book if they want to get it?
Well, I don't know where to find that book right now, other than Amazon for sure. It's for sale on Amazon. I know that there's still in America a ton of Barnes and Noble stores that still sell it. Occasionally, you're going to come across some witchcraft. I get a lot of emails. So any, just, you look the book up, Conjuring Harriet, Mama Moses, Tubman, Spirits of the Underground Railroad. You'll find it on Amazon. You'll find it in Barnes and Nobles in Canada. That's the sister company's Chapters. The only thing really coming up big time for us is definitely WitchCon in March. But by the time people hear this podcast, well, the Dragon Ritual Drummers have a new song coming out. We're about to release it. And by the
Oh,
time you
perfect.
hear it, it'll be available. And that song is called Sedna, and it's a dedication to the Inuit ocean goddess. And the Inuit are the people that live up in the Arctic here in Canada, or, way up. Like, you can't even drive there.
Right.
So the Arctic people have this goddess they venerate. They're essentially encompassing the First Nations people. And so she's the goddess of the ocean. And so we did a big epic expressive piece. It's about 9 minutes long. It's just going to be free on our streaming sites for people to listen to. And so
Perfect.
it's real expressive, tells a story of what they do, that the Inuit have a ceremony where they drum on the shores of the Arctic shores, and then in trance they go to the bottom of the ocean and they encounter the presence of Sedna, and they try to comb the tangles out of her hair, and then you receive the blessing, and then the song, it's all underwater sounding, and then comes back to the shore again. And so that's the other thing. We'll be having that song, Dragon Ritual Drummers. Me and the Dragon Ritual Drummers are on Facebook. You just type us up. You'll find just about everything you need to know, any other social media site. Some we use more than others, but Facebook, 100% the best place to message us, find us, and or me. Both things are wide open.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again for coming on the podcast. It has been wonderful talking to you. I'd love to have you on again sometime to talk about drumming specifically, but I think that's all we have time for today.